KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but you can give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Before we went on air, George Sells actually had a picture of a tree in his yard. He was asking me, what about it? I said 436-7900, so I don't answer questions. Yeah. So anyway, on Saturday morning, we get together and have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard. What's going on there around your mailbox? How about those side yards where they're so shaded and it's really wet? Specialty garden spaces, taste of the tropics. In other words, houseplants. What is a potting mix? What is a potting soil? How do you improve your soils? Should you be shearing shrubs and things like that this time of year? Pruning, bugs, diseases, and use the information to make good decisions. So it's my thoughts and orchestrations. Hopefully will open and solidify your options with a final judgment on what action you're going to take is going to be yours. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your car, your home, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another important player in this game is Alex. He is producing today, and when you call, he will answer the phone. He'll ask you your first name and where you're calling from, and then we'll go from there. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations, and I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine as well. I also do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. So you can visit my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Stepping out of the car, ooh, kind of a coolish, nice breeze. Cloudy skies. The birds of various types were singing in harmony. Blue Baptisia, getting a start. Some already pollinated and potted. Orange milkweed welcomes all. Blue flag iris, well, they're headed for sleep, dormancy. Cardinal flower, Liatris, as the water sound in the little short distance away, cascading down through the stones. Variety of hibiscus. This type of hibiscus is a hardy variety, which flowers can be as much as 8 inches across, and it likes a wet soil environment. So that's really kind of a cool hibiscus, well different from the one we classically think about. And it's a cousin to the Rosa Sharon as well, but this one can almost stand basically to grow in water. So it's sunflowers of all colors and sizes were racing here, there, and everywhere along the walkways. Junipers heavy with blueberries, clumps of ageratum, and buttonbush showing off white flowers. They were floating kind of balls in the air. Bald cypress, nine bark, red buds add to the woody structure. Benches invite to sit down and just relax. Bowlers excite. Compost wood bridge unites. Ornamental grasses, they're blowing in the breeze. And lawn areas transition from one space to the other. Where in the world is this land? Well, it's not Oz. It's not Oz. Is it Oz? Well, it might be Oz. No, it's Brightside St. Louis, which is at the corner of Kings Highway, Vandeventer, Southwest Avenue, and Shenandoah. The building is Wells Fargo Advisors Center, which houses 3 or 4 different, you know, companies or whatever. And one of those happens to be Brightside St. Louis. And as I started to head towards a car, all of a sudden I saw, what is this? There was a trio of goldfinches having purple coneflower seeds for breakfast. So they said, see you later, and I got in the car and drove off. So that was kind of cool to see the, you know, goldfinches. I mean, if you haven't seen them up close, I was probably only about 5 or 6 feet away from them. That color is just so vibrant. It's absolutely unbelievable. And also, maybe in your yard, take a look, because there might be something kind of scary called an aphid lion. If you don't know what an aphid lion is, well, you're going to have to hang on because I will tell you a little bit later. So aphid lions are probably out there. Anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
All right, we're going to start off today with Suzanne and Godfrey.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have two questions about, I have two red sunset maples, and all of a sudden, last week, at the very top in the middle, on both of them, there are bare branches, and I wonder what your thought was about that.
Pretty much, I would think if it's, you know, happening to both of them, and that indicates to me that it's not a disease, it's not insects or anything. It's related just to our nutty, crazy weather. I've not seen a circumstance where we have pop-up thunderstorms almost every day. This
I
is
know.
Just getting crazy. Now, the maples, you know, that particular variety of maple is not one that necessarily likes a really, really wet environment. So they may be, you know, sloughing off some leaves as a result of that. It may be who knows what, but it's weather-related more so than anything that you need to be concerned with.
Would you have them trim that away?
Not necessarily. Because,
okay.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean the branch is dead. They may be just, you know, strong winds may have knocked some of the leaves loose, and who knows what's, you know, what it is. But I'd wait until next year, once spring comes, and let's say sometime in mid-May, if those particular branches or areas have not leafed out yet, then you could probably have a tree service come out and, you know, let's say deadwood those spots.
Great. And I'm also at the base of these trees, you know, their roots are superficial. Is it best to mulch those or just leave them exposed?
It's up to you. I mean, a lot of people mulch them because they don't like to see the roots. But maples just in general are surface rooted. And with our soils, you know, in this region, heavy duty clay, even though in Godfrey you probably have better soil than we do necessarily in the city.
No, it's pretty clay.
But, mulching is just, it's a cosmetic thing. Just don't pile the mulch up on the actually bark of the trunk. So in other words, make a bagel type thing, and no more than like 3 or 4 inches of mulch, maybe 4 at the maximum.
But to leave them bare is okay also?
Oh yeah, absolutely. As long as they're not sticking up to the point where, let's say if somebody's cutting the grass and they're cutting in close and they start, let's say, shaving the bark off the root systems, that could be somewhat of a problem.
Okay, and if you were going to plant arborvitae for a shading situation, what species would you, and to be fast-growing, what species would you recommend to plant?
So you're trying to use them to actually create shade?
Yes.
They're not really going to be all that, you know, shade-oriented. None of them are going to be really all that fast. I mean, the green giant is very fast-growing, but I'm a little bit, it's queasy about it just overall. I just don't see it. But if I was planting arborvitae, I'd probably do the techne, T-E-C-H-N-Y.
Okay.
That's the old time variety, but it seems to withstand ice storms and wind storms and everything else. The green giant, the newer varieties, which is fast growing, gets very big. I just don't see it doing really well in our storm circumstance.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Is there anything you would recommend to plant in a tight space close to a fence for shade? We have there right now, we have two clump birches, and they're just too big for the area, so we're going to have them taken down because they're just overgrowing. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And
The arborvitae, you know, it doesn't branch out, so it's not really going to provide shade other than something vertical. Is that what you're looking at?
Yes.
So
yes.
I would, you know, do you need something evergreen or can you do something deciduous?
Evergreen, probably,
okay.
I would think.
Then probably, I mean, there's some narrow, more upright going, growing junipers. You might consider those. They're going to be a little bit faster growing, and maybe just make sure that you get the Juniperus virginiana. Don't go with that one because that's a native one that can get cedar apple rust. But, just take a look at some of the upright growing junipers.
Okay. And finally, I hate to take up all your time, but on these red birch, on these clump birches on the leaves, there is this little, like, green caterpillar. that's like green with brown dots,
right.
And it sits up like a snake would do.
Right.
What are those? And it's eating the leaves.
Yeah, I forget what that variety is, but I'd have to think about it. But I want to. On the birch, I'll just think about it and see if I can come up with it. If I can't, I'll not think about it, and then it'll probably come to me.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much, and thank you for all you do to make our Earth more beautiful, Mike. You
well,
have a great
you.
Show. Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go to Nancy in Fenton.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I have a couple of questions. My daughter-in-law has small dahlias. And they have buds on them, but the buds never open. Do they just need fertilizer? Or?
Are they in full sun?
Completely full sun. Or two large pear trees in their front yard. But there is sun in the middle of the day.
So on they these. If the bud is if they're budded and the buds are not opening, to me that indicates that it's not exactly the ideal place for them to be planted. So they mm-hmm. need to be where they can get sun all day long, every day. Kind of like if they were a tomato growing in a vegetable garden.
Okay.
And also, it may be just if they were tubers that she bought, the buds may be there, but they may not, some of the varieties of the dahlias bloom a little bit later than other ones, so maybe it's just a little bit premature.
Oh, so they might bloom later, you're saying?
Absolutely, right.
Okay, but the buds are there, and they just never open.
Yeah, so. It's just, you have to be patient.
Oh, okay. I'll tell her that. I've got another comment, too, though. I don't know how bad Japanese beetles are right now. But we had them really bad a couple of years ago, and we found a insecticide called Milky Spore.
Right.
And we used that on our own, and we don't have any beetles anymore at all.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Spore works pretty well. It's going to be every situation and every setting is going to make it so something's going to work better than another. So you were lucky, and you got the right one.
Yeah, well, it was work to put it down, because you have to put it down every so often
right.
in your yard. But it did work.
Right.
We don't have them anymore at all.
All right. Well, great.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Certainly. And speaking of Japanese beetles, I was, in the front yard, I have a bunch of cannas growing in pots and things like that. And I looked and I thought, this doesn't look like the hailstorm damage. And I looked really close at one of the canna leaves. Guess what it was? It was a Japanese beetle. That dirty guy. I didn't know they ate cannas.
I guess they'd eat anything.
You aren't kidding. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And this one, we're going to go to Mark in Imperial.
Okay. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I enjoy your program every week. I have a question about cactus. Are you there?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Good. Your cell phone's today. You never can't tell when they drop.
Right.
Anyway, this cactus has been in the family for 50 years at least. It's a saguaro cactus. It could be a saguaro fox. But it is 7 foot tall.
Whoa.
And at the base where it comes out of the dirt is about the size of an average person's wrist. And then from 3 inches up to 12 inches up, it branches out and other cacti grow up alongside of it. So the problem is it's been in the same pot for 50 years at least. That pot cracked. I put it in a larger pot and didn't disturb it and just added more stuff. Then it got so big it would fall over sideways in the breeze. So I put it in a milk crate, a square milk crate.
That was smart.
Now, I have acquired a 2 foot round octagon red cedar wood pot. It's about 12 inches deep. And my concern is if I move it over to the other pot, I'm afraid that the cactus palm citrus potting mix, fast drying formula, is not going to be consistent enough to keep it standing up.
I mean, as far as weight-wise?
Yeah, that it's in just regular earth. It's been in regular backyard dirt for 50 years at
really?
Least.
Really? Not even in a cactus mix or anything?
No.
Probably what I would do then is, what size pot is it in right now that keeps falling over?
It was about a 6-inch pot, and then it cracked, so I put it in a 12-inch pot.
Okay. Probably.
And, it's in 12-inch now.
I would just leave it in that pot, but what I would do is take that pot and set it in this more decorative pot that you're speaking of, the redwood one, and I would just put some, some rock or some, something in there to just sort of stabilize it so it won't blow over. So in other words, don't take it out and replant it. Just take the pot that it's in, which should be adequate as far as size goes for longevity, and sit it down in there, and then backfill all the way around the pot, with like 6 or 8 inches or so of like some kind of river rock or something along that line.
I think that's a good idea. I was afraid to disturb the rooting system.
Right, exactly. So if you got something that's that old, you want, it's like anything that's that old, you just don't want to mess around with it too much.
Yes, it was my wife's mother's cactus, and she had it back in the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Yep, good luck with that. And you could actually, the bottom part of the pot, like 6 or 8 inches of 2-inch, let's say, bee rock or river rock. And then if you want to have some more decorative rock, to fill the rest of the pot up, then you could certainly do that.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure.
Okay, we are going to go to Joe in Crestwood.
Hi, Joe.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Very good.
I'm calling about my fescue lawn. This has been a recurring problem. About this time of the year, my beautiful green lawn develops brown spots.
Right.
And I don't know if it's a fungus or more likely is annual bluegrass that is lurking in there. And I've tried putting pre-emergent down, and I'm really not even sure what's the right time to do that. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, if you have an annual bluegrass problem in your fescue, then you would be putting the pre-emergent down sometime in mid to late August, because the annual bluegrass is a cool season weedy grass, and consequently that's when it's germinating. It's going to be in September, October, that time of year, and that's when you want the pre-emergent down before it starts germinating.
Okay.
Now, as far as just in general, the fescues and bluegrasses are both cool season lawns, and when the heat of the summertime and the humidity of the summertime comes, they head towards dormancy. So it may be related to a fungus problem, but more than likely it's probably just related to the fact that this is a cool season lawn, and consequently, it's not cool this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a specific areas that you are concerned with that you think might be fungus related, what you need to do is get, like a shovel, a spade, or whatever, and cut out about a 6 by 6 inch section, half of it being the brown and half of it being green. Then take that to your favorite garden center and have them take a look. Or you can actually take a look, down on your hands and knees with a magnifying glass and see if you see any fuzzy stuff in that transition zone, because that can tell you that you may have a fungus problem, as opposed to just related to the fact that it's a cool season lawn.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate it.
Great. Good luck.
Okay. Have a great day.
Yep, you too.
Okay, now we're going to go to Cleo in Olivet.
Hi, Cleo.
Hi, Mike. I'm having a problem with something eating up my hostas. And I tried different varieties, and on one section of my lawn, it always eats them up.
Or is it like holes?
No, the whole leaf.
And where do you live?
Olivet.
So probably it's rabbits? Or I doubt
probably.
If you have, deer, but I mean, the deer love hosta. The rabbits love hosta too, because they like the moisture content. So even though it's raining a lot and there's puddles and everything else, animals of that nature would prefer to have foliage to get their moisture, as opposed to like drinking out of a hole, in the yard or something along that line.
Okay, you mentioned something that I don't know was a deterrent to like deers and rabbits that was only bought at two places, Brannecke and another place. And I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, just go to Bonide, B-O-N-I-D-E, Bonide.com, and just put in repellents, and then you can find out what repellent that you want to try to use for this. And then consequently, you can go in on their website. They'll list all the various, there's places all over the metropolitan area that sells the Bonide products.
I know, but you mentioned one that was only sold at two places, and one was Brandon Key Hardware, because I get deer, I get skunks, I get turkeys, I mean, everything.
Yeah, but I mean, there's all the stuff is sold at multiple places. It's just not sold at two places.
Okay, because you did mention it was only sold at two places some weeks ago.
Well, then I was crazy.
Oh, my.
Because it's not just sold two places. It's sold multiple places.
Okay, so it's Bonide Repellents.
Right.
Go online.
Exactly. They have several different ones. So you can just go and then find out what retailer's the nearest to you, and then you can just decide. You can go and talk to them and see which one they would recommend.
Okay. Thanks so very much, Mike.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Once again, me. Yes, you heard me talking about aphid lions. Don't know what an aphid lion is? Well, you start to see some lightning bugs. Lightning bugs are, well, let's put it this way. Aphid lions become lightning bugs. So the larvae of the lightning bug actually goes after aphids. And so if you have an aphid problem and you got lightning bugs in your yard, then that's going to probably help control some of the aphid circumstances. So that's why an aphid lion is, let's say, a baby lightning bug. And it's so nice to start to see the lightning bugs. A couple weeks ago, you see one or two, and now we're starting to see several. And, boy, it really declares that it is actually summertime. So that's a nice, you know, nice aspect of, you know, nature just in general. You don't think of aphid lion? How can that be related to the lightning bug? But that's what the actual case is. One thing I haven't heard yet, which really indicates summertime, too, is cicadas. We have several that go screeching, you know, in the Christie Park right across the street. And haven't heard any yet, so... don't know what's happening.
Well, we're going to find out what's happening in Annabelle's yard in Wentzville.
Hi, Annabelle.
Hi, how are you?
Hello?
I have a huge ale plant that someone gave me, and one of the leaves fell off. It's a foot long. My question is, it's full of the juice of the plant, the ale. Can I preserve that some way, or do I just throw the whole thing away?
So you're saying it's an aloe vera plant?
Yes.
Basically, I would just, you don't have to throw the whole plant away. You're just saying that one leaf that got broken off.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I would say, yeah, you probably, some people might attempt to try to root that one, you know, that one leaf, but it's probably more trouble than what it's worth. So I would say if you want to get some cactus mix and just, you know, put it in a, you know, a pot and, you know, you're probably going to have to upright it because it's so long. But I wouldn't, to be honest with you, bother with it. I would just throw it away.
I was more interested in the aloe. Can I save that?
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
Oh, okay. Just put it in a plastic bag, a jar, or what?
Well, now, are we talking about the actual plant?
No, we're talking about the juice and that one leaf that broke off.
Right. I don't know what the juice is going to actually... I know it's for burns and things like that, but I don't think it's just, let's say, raw juice from the aloe vera that actually is going to help with burns and itching and those type things. So if you want to save the juice, you can, but I don't know what you're going to do with it.
Okay, thank you. I got another question.
Okay.
I got another old hydrangea bush. It comes out beautiful every year, but it's quit blooming. It's just a pretty bush.
Ooh.
I fertilized it. I don't know what to do to make it bloom. I guess it's just old and tired.
It could be that. You're not pruning it, are you?
No.
Okay, then it's probably just old.
Okay.
We kind of, all of us kind of, let's say, lose our pizzazz as time goes on.
Yes, know the feeling. Last question. Got a sycamore tree, and the bark is coming off. Is that normal?
Yes. Yes, it is. most trees kind of, let's say, get that texture as the bark, as a trunk expands. But sycamores just slough off the bark like that. And I'll tell you, we've got some sycamores across the street in Christie Park. And when we've had some of those winds, it is incredible the amount of bark that's, you know, blowing into our yard from these trees across the street. And
yes, I understand that one.
I mean, it was like almost the front yard was almost totally covered with bark, which was, you know, from the sycamores. There's like three major sycamores right across the street. But no, this is what they normally do.
Okay, because the bark, you know, the tree is dead on that one side, I guess, where the wind, like you say, got it.
Right.
Okay, I'm done. That's all I got.
All right, great. Yeah, to be honest with you, I've never heard of anybody wanting to save the juice of an aloe vera.
Neither have I. All right, here, we're going to go to Jack in Overland.
Hi, Jack.
Good morning, Mike. We have a 10-year-old apricot tree in our backyard, and in the course of about 3 or 4 days, it looks like it's completely dead.
Ooh.
And I, at this point, I'm not expecting to be able to save it, but I just would like to know if you have any idea what it possibly could have happened to it. Do I need to be worried about any adjacent trees, if I can prevent it in the future? All the leaves are on it still. They're all brown and withered up, but they're not dry and crackly like they get in the fall. They're
right.
Still pliable and a little bit of moisture in them. But I can't see any bugs on it, any kind of fungus or anything, but the entire tree, every single leaf, just in a matter of 3 or 4 days.
Basically, it's drowned.
Oh,
so
with
that's,
all the rain we have.
Yes, exactly. So that's, I mean, it has a huge impact. Apricots are, you know, marginally hardy anyway. And though you've had it for 10 years, we've never had a year like this where, as I said, as you know, when the show opened, I've never seen a situation where, you know, at, in our yard at least, like 6 days in a row, we had pop-up thunderstorms. You know, and I mean,
right.
It just drenched the ground, even though it was only for like 15 or 20 minutes for every day for that to happen, besides the normal rain, is just unbelievable. So I think it's just drowned.
Yeah. So if it's drowned, then it would probably be gone if we get a dry spell here coming up in July. I'm not going to do anything with it. I just
right.
want to wait and see.
Yeah, wait until next year.
Possibly it'll come out of it if we stop getting some rain. Is
yeah,
you're giving me some hope.
Well, I can paint you a rosy picture and just get some rose-colored glasses. But it's probably the root system probably been damaged enough that it can't recover. But there's no reason to yank it up out of the ground or anything else. Wait until next spring and see if it does leaf out. And it may not leaf out entirely, but you may still have some viability to it.
Okay. All right. Now, right next to it, probably 10, 12 feet away, 15 feet away maybe, is a cherry tree that's just been prolific every single year. And that doesn't look like there's any problem at all with it. Is that a different moisture need in the cherry tree?
Well, not necessarily different, but just the cherry trees in general are more acclimated to our environment, so they can kind of handle our situation a little bit better.
Okay.
And the apricot is a little bit more marginal, and that's why it could be more prone to, let's say, a situation with the rain the way it is.
Okay. All right. So I'll just stand back and watch and see what nature does with it.
Absolutely.
Very good.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to go to Cliff in Chesterfield.
Hi, Cliff.
Good morning, Mike. Pardon me, sir.
Yes, go ahead.
Boxwoods, they have been shaped in the past, but the last several summers I haven't gotten to them. They're out of control, and I need to know how far I can cut them back.
This time of year, I would not prune them.
Not at all.
No, because the sun is going to get more and more intense. Everything that you cut off is going to expose leaves and everything below that has been shaded by the part that you've cut off, and then it's going to get sunburnt, and it's going to look really, really bad. I'd wait until, let's say the sunlight, the intensity or anything else, it goes down. But probably what I'd really do is just leave it alone all the way until next, let's say, Valentine's Day, mid-February, early March, and do the pruning at that time. And just make sure that you don't cut more than, let's say, 20% off at one time. Because if you do, then you're going to get it back down deep into the shrub where there's may not be any viable buds to produce, you know, any kind of new foliage for you.
Okay, well, I can cross that off my list until Valentine's Day.
Exactly. So just, and that's just, you know, because we just don't know what our weather is going to be like, but definitely pruning something like a broadleaf evergreen, which a boxwood is, this time of year, you're just asking for a, it probably wouldn't kill it, but aesthetically, it's just going to have brown leaves, you know, on the whole exterior of the thing.
Could I just give it a very, a light trim just to get rid of the long extensions and the suckers and that kind of thing?
If you would do that, not using a hedge trimmer, maybe with just a hand pruner, just selectively, you know, do some pruning that way. I would do it that way as opposed to just kind of cutting it.
Got it. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Where are we headed, Alex?
We're going to go to Manchester and talk to Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Mike, thank you. Mike, I had a couple, I had some, I think they call them Russian sage bushes planted a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trimmed back last year, but this year I really didn't. And, man, they're growing kind of wild. Do they need to be trimmed more? Or they just don't have any shape at all.
No.
And I'm not familiar with them, and I'm kind of a little hesitant before I even touch them, but I wanted to get your advice on that.
Basically, they're kind of wild and rangy, and they should be planted in a situation where you really don't have to prune them or cut them off at all. So, I mean, you can do that, but it's, you know, if you cut them, what you might do, depending upon when you do the pruning, you could ruin the actual, well, the foliage is always a great, you know, the foliage is gray-green, so that's nice. And then it has the flower, the bluish flowers on the tips. So,
right.
You know, depending upon when you do the pruning, you could really sort of aesthetically mess them up. You won't hurt them, you won't kill them or anything, but you're just not going to get the value from the foliage and the flower that you've really planted them for.
Okay. Yeah, I had a company do it, and I never really heard of them before. And, I mean, I heard of the company, but I haven't heard of these, and that's why I've been so hesitant. But they're just so damn wild.
They are.
Yeah, and that's a real problem. So it's just kind of, so in the spring or fall, should I just leave them alone is what you're telling me to do?
Basically, yes.
Okay. All right. I will do that. And the other, one other quick question. I have some decorative holly bushes, very low. Should I wait to prune the shape those when it's cooler, or is it safe to do that now, or should I wait?
No, wait, and don't do it even when it's cooler. Wait till we come out of wintertime, and with the broadleaf evergreens, that's when you should be pruning those guys. So sometime again, Valentine's Day to the Ides of March, before the new growth begins.
Very good. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, the Russian sage, I mean, they are wild and rangy, and they get pretty big. I mean, they can get between waist and shoulder high, so big banks of them for the most part. But even a single plant is going to, I mean, it's going to look like not a tumbleweed, but it's going to look wild and rangy, let's put it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Now we're going to go to St. Charles and talk to Doug.
Hello, Doug.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. One of them has to do with a Norway spruce. It's behind a stone wall on a hill, and I've got branches that are hanging over the wall. It makes it difficult to get the lawnmower underneath. Can I trim back those branches there at this time of year? I'm looking at your book right now, your Missouri book,
mm-hmm.
and it tells you prune only dead or damaged branches.
This time of year, yes.
Okay, all right.
So, in other words, you can, you know, there's just too many viruses and diseases and things like that in the summertime. So you open up a wound from doing some pruning, and you could inoculate the tree in the open area before you've cut it off, and could cause problems. And if they're long branches, cut them off in sections, and you always want to make sure the final cut, you're leaving a stub of about a quarter to a half inch, either to the biggest branch it's attached to or to the trunk.
Yes. I can't get back to the trunk of the thing because of the way it is. All I want to do is just trim off about 3 or 4 foot at the end. And I do something that you advise you don't have to do. I always cover mine with some of this rubberized painting stuff. Mm-hmm. Whenever I make a big incision, I always spray that on there because aesthetically it looks better.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, if you cut a branch back like that, and it's going to be shorter than the branches that are higher up that are not causing you trouble, then that lower branch that you've pruned and cut off, it's going to die. So,
well, that's okay because this is hanging over the hill and just makes it difficult to cut grass.
Yeah, so it would be ideal if you could just cut it off entirely and get it done, but if you can't, then I understand.
My other question has to do with mulberries. I know I've talked to you before about mulberries, and I love the berries. And I have deer droppings all over the area. The birds and the squirrels just love the trees, and I love them too. I have a volunteer coming up. If a volunteer comes up, will it be a tree automatically, or can you prune it or anything to make it into a mulberry bush?
No, you really can't. I mean, genetically, it's going to be a tree. So, okay. I mean, you can prune it so it could have multiple, let's say, a couple inches off the ground. You could have branching going up from that, you know, from that point. But it's never going to be, let's say, like a shrub, like a lilac that has stems coming up out of the ground at various places, or, you know, any other type of shrub. But yeah, this is going to be a tree. That's just its genetics.
Do you know if there's any place where you can get mulberry bushes?
I don't even know if there is a mulberry bush, to be honest.
Well, I can remember as a kid growing up, we had bushes in our yard, and they were basically loaded with mulberries, but they were just bushy shaped. So it may have been a tree that was cut down.
Exactly, that's what it was, and had then multiple branches came off the, you know, the main trunk, but it was still, I would assume, you know, probably without, you know, seeing for sure, that it was a mulberry tree that's, you know, somebody cut and made it have multiple stems coming up as opposed to a single trunk with branches coming off that.
Is your Missouri Gardener's Guide revised edition, is that still available?
I think, to be honest with you, I haven't had too much contact with the publisher lately. So I would assume probably online would be probably the best place to get it.
I've got one that's dated 2004, and I didn't know if you had an updated version or not.
I don't know if I do or not, to be honest. Isn't that dumb?
Okay, these people that are calling in with these questions, this book has all sorts of information for them. And I thank you for this.
Well, right. Well, thank you.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye. Yep.
You do the same.
Okay, we're going to go to Collinsville and talk to Kathy, and hopefully make it quick because we're running up against the clock.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I have a question. I have what I believe to be ground ivy overtaking my yard. Like half of my backyard is just ground ivy. There's no grass left. And I guess I want to know what to do with it other than pulling it, because when I pull it, it just comes out in sheets and all that's left is dirt.
Right. Basically, you got a nightmare. You can either embrace it and love it, or you're going to have to use some herbicides to kill it off, but then you're still going to have, you know, a transition zone or transition time. That's where the real trouble is going to come in during that transition. If we have hard rains and everything else, you could have erosion or puddling or who knows what.
So just leave it?
Yes. Now, you want them as winter creeper, it may be something like that. I would take a sample into your favorite garden center and find out exactly what it is. But short of, let's say, killing it off and starting all over again, you're going to have to tear up the root systems. You're going to have to improve the soil if you're going to try to have lawn growing there.
All righty.
So it's going to be a multiple-year process.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yep. And thanks, everybody, for calling in the first hour. We do have another hour of the Garden Hotline, so you can get in line 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. See you after the news.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library. Featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline, tip of the trowel hour, and of which I'll be giving that shortly. But right now, you can call 314 936-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, your questions, your concerns, or your comments. I mean, Milky Spore last hour, that the lady reminded us of ways to control the Japanese beetles. So those are the kind of things, if you don't have a question and you've got some things that have really worked for you, we certainly would love to hear it. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selections, ups and downs, and all arounds. How about the annuals? How about the bulbs, the summertime bulbs? There is still a little bit of foliage left from the spring bulbs, but for the most part, it's pretty much laying flat on the ground and brown. The edibles, the ground covers, like the lady that had the ivy that just overtook her lawn. And now, what can she do? I said it's going to be a long, involved, multiple-year process to convert an area that has been run over by, any kind of evergreen ground cover and to get it back into a lawn situation. So perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, water gardens, I'll share my thoughts. But please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take. There are plenty of different garden paths. It's just one that I've, sort of over the eons, decades that I've been fooling around in the outdoors. That's kind of what I've come up with. And across the big board from me is Alex. He is producing today. So when you call, he will answer the phone. He'll ask your name and where you're calling from. During the week, I spend my time doing some landscape consulting. And what I can do is come to your home and do what I call a walk and talk. I can solve aesthetic problems. I can solve problems. And you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, the homepage. That's where my email address and phone number is. And you can contact me and we can get set up a time where I can come to your home. And speaking of walk and talks, this past Wednesday, I had a walk and talk in Hermit. 44 West, then got on to 100, went through Washington and all that. I'll tell you, I don't know if the rain or what it is, but I have never seen so many different fields of corn, and the corn was so dark green. And then you get to Hermann, and I mean, the valleys and everything else of Hermann, it was just absolutely striking. So it was a great walk and talk. It's a little bit further than I normally go, but it was well worth it just from the standpoint of seeing the corn. I mean, it was like I say, I couldn't believe how dark green it was. Usually it's kind of a yellowish green, but none of this looked really, really great. So the lady that I met with her at her new home, she's got some really interesting perspectives on things as far as what she's going to need to do to get everything sort of stabilized to what she wants. So that's the kind of stuff I do, and today I'm going to Chesterfield after the show. So tip of the trowel, how about, let's say you live in Bethalto. There's a Mississippi Valley Garden Club. Garden clubs are really an excellent way if you're unsure, if you're a beginner, even if you're an advanced gardener. A lot of times if you go to some garden club meetings, you can get some insight that maybe you should have known, maybe you didn't know, and I mean, what could be better than that? So the Mississippi Valley Garden Club in Bethalto, the Owensville Garden Club, which is in Owensville, the Parkland Master Gardeners, which is in Farmington, and the Perennial Garden Club of Clark County. So there's garden clubs all over the place, and all the members of the garden clubs are very, very knowledgeable. So anytime that you're unsure of something, why not, find out, very easy to find out what the local garden club is, and then attend some of those meetings. You're going to walk out of there, you're just amazed at how knowledgeable the people are that belong to these garden clubs. So if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Want to take a couple calls, Alex?
Sure. Let's go to Neil and the Pear.
Hi, Neil.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Great show. Got a quick question about, in my turf, I have some, what I believe to be some Japanese or Korean type of clover. Grows out, doesn't grow too tall. This year seems a lot worse than normal. My question is, would it be a good idea to find like a granular type of herbicide for this type of invasive weed?
You don't necessarily need granular. You just make sure that on the label it says it will control, the type of clover that you have. So that's more important than whether it's granular or liquid. I'm more of a fan of the liquids because it's, you know,
okay.
And what I like to do is with, you know, herbicides, if there's like big patches or just patches or even single plants, if I'm going to put some kind of herbicide on them, I always step on them a little bit to kind of wound them, open up some areas so the herbicide's just absorbed in quicker.
Okay. Yeah, it gets really bad this year than normal, and it's throughout the whole neighborhood. And I didn't know if there's do you have any recommendation on how to prevent it?
Yeah, move away from here.
All right. It's a never-ending battle then, I guess, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike. Great show. Love it. Take care.
Yeah, you do the very same thing.
Okay, we're going to go to John in Chesterfield.
Hello, John.
Hey, good morning. Two things. Last week, had a big tree removed, and the stump grinder person came later. I wasn't here. I was planning on having them, as you're trying to separate the chips from the soil so they could put the soil back and keep the chips away. Well, when I got home, it was all mixed together and mounded up. He made it nice and smooth, but now they're all mixed up. The tree had been was surrounded by a ground clover, ground cover. It's been there so long, I don't remember the name. But anyway, it was doing fine in the shade. So I'm wondering if I can, any way I can get that ground cover to continue to grow and fill in where it's just the soil now.
Basically, it's going to be a very, very long involved process. I would get rid of anything that was ground. So in other words, dig it out. You're going to end up with a hole. Then, you know, go to like St. Louis Composting or someplace and get a, you know, let's say a mix of topsoil and compost together and then backfill that spot and just kind of leave it alone and let it sort of infill on its own. But it's going to be a very, very involved process, you know, time.
I vaguely remember reading in a gardening book like maybe 10, 15 years ago that straight nitrogen helps get rid of the remains of those chips and helps the soil get back to normal. Did you ever heard of that or what?
No, I haven't really heard of that, but basically any of those wood chips that are there now, they're gonna have to implode. And what that does is as that wood, let's say, breaks down and implodes, it actually binds up nutrients and causes problems. That's one of the restrictions on any kind of plant material, whether you try to turn it back into, let's say, a lawn circumstance, which I know you don't want to do, or whether you want to try to get, let's say, the ground cover established in there. And then all the roots, the lateral roots, they still have to implode too. So there's going to be a long and process. But, you know, putting, let's say, urea, which would pretty much pure nitrogen, I don't think that's going to make that much difference. And if it did, what it would be so, you know, potentially so strong that it could do damage to anything that would be try to be invasive into that situation or circumstance.
So dig it up and replace it.
Yes. And still it's going to be a very slow process. There's no getting around it.
Okay. But I got some good news to report.
All right.
About 2 years ago, I decided that using those Japanese beetle traps was stupid because it just made more cum.
Right.
So for the last two winters, I put Grubex around my privacy fence. I have the grapevines growing up on the top of the privacy fence, so they're pruned so they sit there on the top and get sun. This year, when I wanted about 3 weeks ago, I went out to my weekly spraying of the grapes, and there was about a dozen Japanese beetles on just one plant. So I sprayed them with the 7, came out the next day, there were 3. Sprayed those. There haven't been any for the last almost full 3 weeks now.
All right.
So I think that Grubex really does the job.
Yeah, it does, because, I mean, you know, Japanese beetle is a grub, and you're going right after, let's say, they're just baby Japanese beetles. Our region has 5 different kinds of grubs in the ground, and Japanese beetles happens to be one.
Yeah. So it really works. Just one medium-sized bag is enough for what I need to do for, well, I still got some left from last year, so.
Well, great.
It works great.
Thanks for the insight.
Okay.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Where are we headed, Alex?
Let's see here. We're going to go talk to Lou here in St. Louis.
Hi, Lou.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking the call. On aloe vera, there are many uses for the juice and the gel. The juice is very soothing to the digestive tract, and the gel you can put it on, like to soothe sunburns and things like
right.
that. Walgreens even sells aloe vera juice and possibly gel too. So I just wanted to let you know about that.
Yeah, but I mean, so you're saying that you could take the juice off that lady that had, you know, a stem that broke, and you could actually use that juice in and of itself, even though it hasn't been, let's say, manufactured or nothing done to it. Just straight aloe vera juice, huh?
Right. I don't think there's any thing that they have to do to change it. They just extract it. They could press it from the leaves themselves, like cold pressed, and then do that. But you know, if you wanted to be safe, you could just use it for sunburns and things like that.
Right. Just rub it.
Mm-hmm.
All
but
right.
I've had from Walgreens the aloe vera juice. Drinking, you can either drink it straight or mix it with whatever you want to mix it with, and
really?
Drink it. And it's soothing for the digestive tract.
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, I use the gel, you know, for like itching and other things as well. So, but I've never actually can honestly say I've actually had any aloe vera juice I've drank.
Yeah, I have, but it's been a commercial, you know, from a commercial source, so
sure.
I don't know if it's safe to drink right from the plant or not.
Yeah,
but I know
that was my concern, you know, and telling her to go ahead and just use it. So, but
yeah,
yeah, I mean, she could certainly have used it to rub it on something if she, you know, if she needed that. But yeah, drinking it could be pretty wild.
Yeah, unless you get it from a commercial source.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks.
Right. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, now we're going to go talk to Letty in Caseyville.
Hi, Letty.
Hello. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I got two questions. I got about a dozen Yoshino cherries trees grafted, and they're 20-plus years old, and they are dropping their leaves. At this rate, they're not going to have any for fall. Is it the stress because of the age, or is it the water, or what?
It's a rainfall. It's the amount of water. It's got to be.
Oh, okay, because so, I know they're not going to last too much longer.
Yeah, I mean, age-wise, that could be a factor, but if they're all doing the same thing, you know, versus, let's say, one or two out of the ones that you have, if they're all doing it, then that sort of indicates it's, you know, environmentally related.
And they're all doing it.
Yeah.
I really have to cut them up almost like fall.
Right.
Okay, my second question is, I've got a magnolia bush. It's not a tree, and it's big. It's 20 some odd years old, and it's got white mold spots on the limbs.
Are you sure? So are you sure it's like a fungus or a mold or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. It looks like it. Yeah,
I would say don't worry about it.
Oh, good. Because I'm too old to try to get up there and spray anything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of lichens and things like that that grow on tree branches, on tree trunks, and, you know, for the most part, they don't do anything that's problematic. So
okay.
As long as it's just, you know, a cosmetic thing on the outside of the branches, don't worry.
Right. I never did see it before when it got pruned, and we were pruning it, my daughter was, and then we seen so many of them on there and didn't know what it was.
Yeah. I mean, it could be as a result of, again, the environment, the humidity is greater, so it may have been there just in smaller amounts, but it's not really a concern.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your information.
Sure.
Have a good day.
You do the same.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, now we're going to go to Don in North County.
Hi, Don. Hello, Don. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have a problem in my front yard. I think there might have been beetles that went down into the soil, and the grass has just been completely eliminated in a large patch, and I'm having trouble with the erosion, and I don't know. I tried planting grass seed, and of course, with this kind of weather, it was very difficult getting anything going. So I put in two squares of sod, and so far they seem to be doing all right.
Okay. So you may have had grub problems, you know, so maybe if that was it, just, you know, as a gentleman we talked to earlier, he put Grub-X down. So you might think about putting some Grub-X down to kill the grubs, because that's the larvae of the beetles. And then that's the grubs are the ones that do the damage to the root systems of your lawn.
Yeah, I mean, I've just got bare ground out there. I don't hardly have any weeds growing. I mean, it just killed everything.
Yeah. That could certainly be the case. Usually they go specifically for a certain type of plant, but if you got multiple types of grubs, you know, which I said there was five different kinds of grubs, then each one could maybe eating on something else, or it could be, you know, a couple different factors. Do you fertilize? You do all that stuff? Have you ever core aerated?
No, I didn't core aerate, but I fertilize, of course, and put down weed killer.
And you do the same fertilizer year after year after year?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so see, that could be problematic because phosphorus and potassium, the last two numbers on the bags of fertilizer, they stay in the soil for a long period of time. So we're finding out when people are getting, they're having problems with their lawn, they're getting a soil test done, and we're finding out that there's extravagant levels of phosphorus and potassium, and that could lead to the decline of your lawn just in general in those spots. So that might be, you know, one of the factors that, you know, to consider, maybe changing the type of fertilizer, maybe going ahead and spending the $20 or $30, whatever it is, and get a soil test done in this area and find out what's actually going on in the ground rather than just trying to guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's a fertilizer because just this year I started up with a yard service, so they put down something different than what I've been using, of course. But I have eliminated the weeds, but I can see these little holes in the soil. Like I say, there must be beetles going down in there.
Yeah, the beetles, this time of year, they're not going to, I mean, it could be worm casting, it could be, you know, who knows what. But generally, the beetles this time of year, they're up and out. They're not going down into the ground.
Okay. So if I put down sod, then I wouldn't have to worry about it being killed or not.
You shouldn't, you know, but that's not to say that the grubs couldn't be, you know, down, you know, in the future in the, you know, your lawn. But if you have a lawn service, what are they telling you about this dead spot?
Well, they don't say anything. They just put down the fertilizer and the weed killer, and they're off.
Oh.
I'll have to talk to them, I guess.
Right, exactly. Have them do a soil test for you.
Okay.
And then you can find out what's going on.
All right, how about the test kits you get from the, you know, Home Depot or something like that?
I think they're pretty useless, but that's my own opinion.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you got to have a laboratory do it as opposed to just putting some dirt in with a liquid and shaking it and saying what color it is.
Okay. All right, then. Thanks, Mike, very much.
My pleasure.
Okay, now we're going to go to Lee in Carbondale.
Hi, Lee.
Hi, Mike. I want to thank you and KMOX for your service to the community. And this is an update. I called you back in the end of April. I needed to plant something on my northern border, and you suggested junipers, so me and my wife went and looked at junipers, and we found something as a replacement. It's just the most beautiful plant we've ever seen. I think the name is Salix integra. They're drapered willow, flamingo willow, Harkuri nagishi. They're the most beautiful plant we've ever seen. It's got green leaves at the bottom and white green leaves in the middle and real vibrant pink colored leaves at the tip. And we planted those, and they've grown about 2.5-3 feet since May.
Wow.
And the tips now, they've turned kind of a reddish brown color instead of pink. So I'm wondering if that's just because of the season now, or that they're being drowned by too much rain.
Well, hopefully you planted them so the top of the root ball, 20%, was above the surrounding ground. So, in other words, if there's not water sitting around it, it may be related to weather. It may be related to how it's planted. You know, so, but that's, you know, discolor.
Well, the dirt got about two and a half feet of it's just black topsoil, and then below that's clay like everywhere else.
Of course.
But, they're just growing like gangbusters.
Well, the discoloration or the change in the color could be related to weather. It could be related, you know, to other circumstances as well as, you know, the content, nutrient content of your soil, all kinds of different factors. If you're getting that kind of surge, because you said you planted them in May, and this is only July, and they've already grown 2.5 feet, that's a lot.
Yeah, they're just growing like gangbusters.
Yeah.
Well, everything we got is just growing. Our elephant ears are about the size of a human. And in our backyard, in the shady part, we've got, what are those called?
Hydrangeas,
but they haven't gotten any blooms on them yet this year, so we're kind of worried about that.
Yeah, it's a little bit late because most of the varieties, even the oak leaf hydrangea, the ones that are more shade tolerant, they should be at least well budded, if not showing full flowers.
So just leave them alone.
It may be a variety that's, you know, it's more shaded than what they can handle as far as being able to produce the flower buds.
Yeah, I just thought I'd give you an update that we didn't go with junipers.
Okay.
We went with a dappled willow.
Well, that sounds perfect.
It worked out very well.
It was
beautiful.
What about the cherry tree?
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, it makes me really sad. The gentleman we were just talking to, I tell him to buy a certain plant and use, he doesn't do it. And he gets a great plant and it works much better. So, see, mine is not the only garden path to take, even though I wish everybody would. No.
I don't even know where to go from there. Oh, yeah, I do. We're going to go to Arnold and talk to Don.
Hi, Don.
Hey, Mike. How you doing this morning?
Very good.
Two questions. I have a Japanese maple that is kind of in the corner of my front yard, so it doesn't get too much sun. And this past winter, I've had bagworms on it.
Whoa.
Yes, this is the second time I've had bagworms on it. I had them about 2 years ago also. And I noticed the top part of the tree, the leaves started falling off this spring after they came out. And now there's no leaves, and it's basically like dead branches up there. Would that be from the bagworms?
No.
Not at all.
So basically the bagworms you can just pluck off. Normally we always think of bagworms going on junipers or on evergreens, but I've seen them on, you know, this, you know, some of the smaller deciduous trees like the Japanese maple, but no, this is not something that's going to be a result of that.
Okay. So the dead branches are just could be the age of the tree or something,
yeah,
or
the age of the tree, the weather. Multiple factors kind of rolled together in one, and just, you know, this particular situation. Is it near larger trees?
No, it's in the corner of my house by the garage and the house.
Okay.
And, you know, so it doesn't get too much sun in the morning. That's about the only time it gets sun.
Now, is this one of the larger, let's say, Japanese maples, or is this one that kind of grows like an umbrella?
No, this is a larger one.
Okay, so it's probably a blood good or one of those type of varieties. So, why that's happening, it's a little difficult to tell, but it really is not related to the bagworms at all.
Okay, and my second question, I have a row of miniature blue spruces.
Ooh.
And in my backyard, and they're like for a border. And I was kind of wondering, can I trim those back any because they're kind of getting too full, and I'd like to see if I could trim them back or not.
I would not fool around trying to prune them.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the evergreens, you start pruning them, and it could lead to some, you know, one step of a problem, and then another step, and another step, and another step. I'd leave them alone.
Okay, because I know, you know, the inside they is dead, basically.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't. And, no sun hits the inside, you know, the interior, because the needles that are further out are shadowing it, then the tree just sloughs off those needles.
Right. Okay. Well, that's all I had.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot for the show.
Well, thanks
Goodbye.
For having me on your show.
All right. Bye.
See
Have
you.
A good day.
You too.
Okay, now we're going to go talk to Roger in South County.
Hi, Roger.
Hello.
Hi.
Got a comment about bagworms. Okay. Not galls, not bagworms. You had me thinking of bagworms. I've had galls on my pin oaks for about 4 to 5 years mm-hmm. now, and this year I have none. I still got some old ones that are falling off the tree. Those are dead branches coming down with a dead galls on them. But they have all, I've got five pin oaks running around somewhere in my house, and a lot of red oaks, but northern red oaks. But the gall, the bagworms have only, the galls have only been on the pin oaks all this time, and they are gone. I haven't seen one new one yet this year. So if people are worried about, that's really my whole comment, is that if you worry about your pin oaks, they'll probably clear up after they move on to somebody else's trees for a while. So.
Well, that could be the case because generally they stay, you know, around the tree where they were born, and that's how.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I've seen people that have had, you know, I don't want to say new, but yes, new galls regularly for years and years and years and years, and sometimes it could be, you know, you're very lucky.
Yeah, I haven't treated them or anything. I just trying to see how long they're going to last, but it hasn't affected. I got northern red oaks all around here too, and it didn't bother them at all.
Yeah,
none of my other oak trees, just the pin oaks.
Right, they're much more prone to the, you know, the problem with the galls. There are, you know, some of the other ones, you know, some of the other varieties of oaks will have the problem, but nothing like the pin oaks.
Yeah. Well, that's all. I just wanted to comment on that so that people take that this isn't a death sentence.
Very true. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're going to go to Dupo and talk to Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good.
Hey, I got a question about crepe myrtles. I'm wondering how to prune the crepe myrtles in the springtime, I think it is.
Yeah, you want to prune them before the new growth begins in the springtime. So even before the new foliage starts emerging, let alone the flower buds, you want to prune them then. So sometime, you know, mid to late March, early April, so that's when you want to do the pruning.
Well, how far back should you prune last year's? You know, it's got the stem still there, you know.
Yeah, right. And the stems are still going to be viable unless with, you know, severe winter kill. So that's
okay.
I mean, that's what you, you know, sometimes crepe myrtles can be killed all the way to the ground if we have a severe winter. Some years it doesn't even look like, it looks like you live in Florida or something, because all the stems, branches, everything are viable and have come back very well. So it just depends upon the year more so than anything else. And
all right.
Some people don't prune them at all, and you know they've got them where they're 15 or 18 feet high because of the variety they are. And some people cut them back to 4 or 5 feet. Some people cut them even lower than that.
Well, the reason I ask is I was down south this weekend, and I noticed the crepe myrtles, and they look like little trees almost. You know,
right.
They got 3 or 4 branches coming up with nothing on them. And then all of a sudden they bloom out to a real pretty flower, you know?
Right. That's a separate variety than the ones we can grow here.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's a completely different plant. I mean, they're cousins, but they're not the same plant.
I got you. I got black diamond crepe myrtles.
Right.
And I was just wondering if that was possible, you could do that here or not, I guess.
No, for the most part. People try to grow the trees. You know, they bring them back from Florida or from wherever they happen to be. But if we get a, you know, sort of a nasty, even just a few days in the wintertime, it generally kills them all the way to the ground.
Right, right. All right, well, that's all I needed to know. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate the show.
Well, thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go talk to Joanne in South County.
Hi, Joanne. Hello? Nope.
All right, we're going to go try Diane in Germantown.
Hi, Diane. Are you there? Go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Yes, I am. I have two questions. First of all, last week, about overnight, we ended up getting like a bunch of brown spots in our yard, almost like it looks like it's dead. And I didn't know why all of a sudden, if it was rain-related or what.
It could certainly be moisture-related. You know, usually something like that that happens that quickly is, you know, moisture, humidity, fungus. Just dig up, go out. Well, first thing, just go out and get down on your hands and knees and look at the brown spots. Look at where it's brown, right at the edge where there's some green next to it, and see if you see anything that looks out of the ordinary, like, you know, fungus or fuzzy stuff or anything at all. And that could indicate that it is fungus related. And the fungus could be spread by mowers. It could be spread on the bottom of your feet, by your, you know, your pet's paws. So it could be spread as a result of physically moving things around like that. But usually it doesn't happen overnight.
Okay. Well, we did have our roof replaced, so there was a lot of traffic in the yard that could have been from that.
Certainly. Very much
okay. Okay. And then one last question is, when is a good time to prune burning bushes?
Basically, you're growing them for the fall. So once the fall, you know, the foliage starts falling off, you can prune them at that time all the way through until the new growth begins in the spring.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Okay.
All right. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored in part by St. Louis Public Library, featuring the birds and bees at Central Library. Now, once again, it's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Where are we headed, Alex?
We're going to go to Collinsville and talk to Gary.
All right. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yes, hello, Mike.
Hi.
Just like last week, I almost missed your show. I was out pulling weeds in the garden. I want to wish you a happy belated birthday.
Well, thanks.
I got two questions. One question. I'm getting them beetles and those little white butterflies and then stink bugs in my garden on my vegetable plants. Is there anything organic that I can use to get rid of them?
Yeah, I mean, there's several different... Bonide has a couple different products that can be used, like Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. You could do that. There's several other products that are not related to Bonide that are available. So you could just go to your favorite garden center and tell them that you're looking for an organic product to, you know, to get rid of the, you know, the insects that you're talking about.
Okay. I have got that Bonide, but I only can find it in around here. In the spray bottle. Well, I'd be going through a lot of spray bottles. Do they sell that in concentrate?
I think they do. You know, I don't have the list of ways they sell it, but I'm pretty sure it is sold in a concentrate to use with like a hose end attachment type thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was wanting to know, but, I'll look into that Captain Jackson. I thank you very much.
All right. Yeah. It's pretty darn effective. That's all I know.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, now we're going to go to South County and to Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
Well, hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just planted a Japanese maple. I heard you talk about one before. And it's the small umbrella type.
Right.
And I had taken out one of those great big Japanese maples that got too out of hand for me. So... is it okay to fertilize this new one that I just planted in its place?
No. Don't fertilize this time of year.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought you would be able to tell me.
Yeah, basically what will happen is by the time the root system and everything takes up the nutrients, it could cause it to, let's say, delay as far as going into dormancy related to winter. And then you could have some, let's say, damage as a result of winter temperatures and new growth. Even though the new growth may not be obvious, it's pushing, you know, the buds beyond the point that they need to. They need to be, you know, tight going into wintertime, not open, not even halfway open, not even slightly open.
Okay, I gotcha. The other one did really, the big one did good, but I had thought at the time I was planting one of these small ones, but this one got so big that it's too close to my house, and so I just thought, well, I might as well get rid of it. So, okay, well, thank you, and have a good 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, you do the same, and hopefully you didn't plant it right on top of where you took the other Japanese maple out.
Why? Why?
Because the wood of the trunk, even though the stump was ground out and everything else, there could be some wood byproducts there, and it could really be detrimental to the new Japanese maple's root systems getting established.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're going to go talk to... Who did I get on here? Oh, Joan. I'm sorry, in St. Louis.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, Mike. I was wondering, is it too mulch in my gardens now?
The only problem with putting mulch down this time of year is the heat, because mulch does generate heat. But if you're going to do it and you need it, basically around perennials and things like that, only 1 to 2 inches, woody plant material, 3 to 4 inches, but water the area before you put the mulch down. So in other words, okay, right before, so the water will help cool.
All right. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, now we're going to go talk to Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. So recently we had a stray cat come under our patio and lay a bunch of kittens. The cat took off and for some reason left kittens, and now we have fleas all over our yard. We've got a dog, and we can't let him out without having fleas all over him. And even in the front yard, it's gotten there, and we're just not sure what to do. We've tried everything we can think of.
Again, I'm going to mention, you know, Bonide. Bonide has a product that, you know, controls fleas and ticks. So go to bonide.com and look for flea and tick control.
Okay, could you spell that for me, please?
B-O-N-I-D-E, then .com.
Okay, and yeah, I apologize if that was asked earlier. I just got in my car, but it's been a nightmare. I mean, it's been going on weeks now, and it's, you know, it's just horrible for the dog, horrible for us.
Right.
It's no fun for anybody.
Fleas are horrible. There's no getting around it. You know, people think ticks are bad. Ticks are bad, but fleas are the worst to me when it comes
to it's emotional for everyone. And poor dog just lays there and lets us do it, but for goodness sakes, it's, you know, it's horrible for him,
right,
too. So, all right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep. So, again, right, flea and tick control by Bonide.
Okay, probably our last one of the day. Bill in South County.
Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I have a question about growing grass. I know this is not the time of year to do it, but I have 3 areas in my front yard that are so conspicuous every year about being vacant of anything green that National Geographic has come out and has determined that it's called Wheat Hinge. You know, it's just an alien place to land your spaceship. It's just, so I thought you'd get a kick out of that. But it's, you know, for the past 3 years, about 4 years ago, I had some sort of fungus that destroyed a lot of yards in the area, and I took a lot of care, and I got most of my yard back, except portions of the front, portions of the back, and the portions of the front, my grass all around it is extremely lush. I mean, I fertilized it, I aerated it, I did every, you know, St. Louis compost, I did all the right things, and it looks great, except these 3 areas. One is by the driveway, one is in the middle of the yard, and one is by the street. Each one is about, 5 yards long, maybe a yard across.
I would say take a soil sample, you know, from all 3 areas, take them into Kirkwood, take them to the University of Missouri Extension Service, have them find out what there's going on in that spot. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We're kind of running out of time. Oh,
sorry.
I was just going to say, okay.
Talk to us next week. Mike Miller, KMRS Garden Hotline. See you.